would you like to be able to sell your property portfolio for top dollar in New York? Today we have Ethan Leifer, and he's the founder of 74 West Real Estate in New York. So Ethan, please tell us, how can sellers of properties sell their luxury property portfolio in New York?
Property Wealth Strategies podcast with Lily Patrashko shares world's most influential property investors, sharing their strategies for making money with property.
Well, first of all, Lily, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here. Well, selling these days has actually become a marketing job, believe it or not. And the most successful agents and the most successful companies excel at exposing luxury properties to the most amount of people. And when you are looking for someone to represent you and someone to help you sell either one property, several properties, whatever it may be, you need somebody who's going to, like I said, get the most amount of eyeballs on the property. And the more people that, it's a numbers game, the more people that we can put the listing in front of, the more people we're going to get through the door, the more people that we get through the door, the more interest, the more offers, the more money. So our goal is to flood the market with information and marketing collateral about the property. And by doing so, we keep the days on market down. And days on market down means extracting more value for the property. So our goal is to sell as fast as possible to maximize value.
Thank you. Tell us, what are some creative marketing and negotiation tactics that you would use for a potential seller in order to make sure that they are selling their luxury property in the desired time frame and at the desired monetary value?
So we do a combination of things. And the real linchpin for us has been digital ads. Digital ads these days, you know, it used to be, you know, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, you know, real estate sections. Very few people are using print media these days. But these digital ads that are geographically placed, so we put like an invisible radius around a property, and anybody who enters into that radius, we can make it as big or small as we want, are going to get hit with ads for the listing with our beautiful videos that we've done or beautiful photos that we've taken. And they're going to get it on major websites like CNN.com, FoxNews.com, ESPN.com, NewYorkTimes.com, WallStreetJournal.com, hundreds and hundreds of major websites. And it's tied with AI, so we're able to put it in front of people who we know can afford the property. So it's able to determine based on their behaviors and stuff, kind of what price point a certain buyer would be in. So we're putting the more luxury properties in front of luxury buyers and maybe some more affordable properties in front of, you know, people working in that price point. And by doing that, it has really, really opened up the floodgates of traffic and exposure, because we are not just depending on people who are going and searching real estate on Zillow or StreetEasy. We are going and bringing the property out to them, to the masses, and bringing the property out to people not just looking for real estate, but maybe they didn't know they were looking for such a property. And by getting more eyeballs on it, like I said, we are increasing the number of people through the door, and the sales record has spoken for itself.
Thank you. How do you reach potential buyers that are not really on social media, that tend to be so rich that they have handlers doing everything for them, and they tend to not even be like on social media? And, you know, the kind of people that are so wealthy that they don't even bother with like anything, because everything tends to come to them and people pitch them stuff all the time. Well, how would you go about reaching those kind of people?
Well, you're right. It does come to them, and we would go have a similar game plan, and that would be just picking up the phone and calling their handlers or their attorneys or their financial people and putting the opportunity in front of them. So for those types of buyers, it's a little more boots on the ground, whether it's a handwritten note or a letter or something to their office or a phone call. We are definitely boots on the ground, old school, getting that the information of the properties that we want them to know about to the people that we need to get the information to.
Thank you. What other creative marketing strategies would you have in terms of, let's say, perhaps creating affiliations with the types of people that already have your target market? Who would you reach out to in order to kind of create these kind of affiliations? Would it be insurance agents? Would it be divorce lawyers? Would it be, I don't know, I'm not sure if bankers have those kind of like databases of foreclosures, or are those public? I'm not sure how it works, where you're able to kind of get through the data that could be useful in order to have that information.
Yeah, so you know, we definitely have some more direct feeding relationships, divorce attorneys, like you mentioned, estate attorneys, as people unfortunately pass away and have these properties that families need to sell, are definitely very, very closely knit with the real estate community. And, you know, also we give a lot of business out and hope to get business in return, right? So we're talking about mortgage professionals, real estate attorneys, especially here in New York, which is an attorney state. So, you know, we try to build those reciprocal relationships. We're referring business to you. You refer business to us. We're also very close with architects, interior designers, these sorts of people who are very involved in some aspect of residential housing. They could all be tremendously helpful for us business, and vice versa. We also obviously have a lot of people that we can refer to them. Even, you know, movers are a big one. But we also, and this is, I think, specific to New York City with how we live, we do a very good job of getting very close with the doormen in the buildings, because they know everything that goes on in these buildings and who's thinking of selling, who's not. And, you know, we would go around bringing $5 or $10 Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts gift cards to the doorman just as a thank you listing that we're showing. And that goes a long way of them. They hear of someone else, you did a good job in the building, you know, they give them our information, you know, for someone to talk to. So these people in the know in New York City are definitely a great referral source and a great place to market yourself, on top of the other people we discussed already in the attorney world and banking world as well.
Thank you. What's the typical, like, average viewing rate for a property that wants to sell? I mean, like, how many times would you have to view a property typically? I mean, show a property out before it actually gets sold out?
Yeah, it depends on the market, really, you know, and the type of property. But, you know, I recently had a $5 million listing that, you know, I think a year ago, I showed twice and sold it. I have a townhouse listing now that's, you know, about $9 million that I've been showing for, you know, I'm showing it a lot, but it's been, you know, more than 6 months on the market. So just because that has many more options, there are a lot of townhouses on the market right now. So people are just taking their time and they want to see as many as possible. So in New York City, those types of things are very, very asset based and neighborhood based and price point based. So I would say the average right now days on market in New York City is probably somewhere between 60 and 90 days.
Thank you. What's the best way to create advantageous relationships that in the ultra high net worth world, so that when you have something to sell, you have already a community to promote it to? Like, what kind of groups would you need to like reach out to, or what kind of people, what kind of like networks? Can you give us some names or like at least some ideas of the types of groups that someone would kind of start to create relationships with in order to have community, a large community to promote this to?
Yeah, I would actually start with the broker community here in New York City, because there are so many brokers here and so many who deal, who have very high net worth clients and have direct access to them, that we need to do as much marketing to the broker community as we do to the buyer and public community. So, you know, I have a lot of relationships with, you know, the top brokers in the city who, you know, have buyers who are buying $200, $300 million penthouses here in New York City. So, you know, I would be reaching out to them directly, and this exclusive group of brokers, I think, is where I start, because they have people who are looking for real estate already, and they have people who are looking for this type of real estate who are buying in New York City. So I think that would be my go-to group, is that the that's the other high-end, very successful brokers in New York City.
Thank you. What's the best way to sell a luxury home for top dollar, considering that every buyer has different considerations? At the same time, for example, let's say for some people, a garden, a really large garden is very important. For others, you know, having a home that has a really nice, I know, potential nursery room, or I don't know, a really nice fireplace. Or, you know, there are people that have a lot of like must-haves and some nice-to-haves. So I wonder, like, how do you kind of how do you sort of like communicate that in the messaging? Because let's say if you do like a standard listing, then you can say the buyers have to kind of sift through to see if that kind of house meets their criteria. But for example, and the reason I'm asking you this is because, for example, when I was advertising my courses before, what I was doing was like I was using keywords that were actually searched for in Google, and I would put like 150 ads for like one event with different keywords, and I would get, for example, like 300 people register for a particular keyword, and I had, let's say, 50 people register for a different one, and then 150 for another one. So in total, like, let's say 1500 people would register for an event. And what was interesting to me was like seeing how people preferred a particular keyword. So is there any way that you do that in your advertising? Is it that you do it through paid ads? For example, like, I know, a three-bedroom house with a garden, or three-bedroom house with a large nursery room. And maybe the house has both, and it has a lot more things that other, you know, people would find important.
Yeah, so we definitely do that. Because with each listing, each property we're selling, we are writing a description for everyone that goes online. So we are definitely putting those keywords within the description, and people can read it and see the features that they like. But we also know, you know, for a particular building or particular neighborhood, why people want to move there, or what is particularly attractive about this location or this building. And so we are featuring that in those paid ads, in the ads that we're doing. We would, you know, mention, you know, waterfront, you know, Brooklyn Heights building, right? Because people want to be in Brooklyn Heights. They get to look into Manhattan, and they want to be on the water, but it's just outside of Manhattan. So it just, you know, feels different. And so we are definitely emphasizing the strengths of a particular building. Maybe it's an amenity. Maybe it's one of the few buildings that have pools in it, or a very special garden, which my townhouse has, which was written up in the paper. This is a huge garden shared amongst 10 homes, which is so unique in New York. So those things were playing up, and it tends to find the people who are looking for something like that. So yes, we're putting in the descriptions, we're putting it in the headlines, we're putting it in the ads and all of those places as well. All of the features and amenities and highlights and of either the neighborhood or the building or both or the home that people would want to see.
Thank you. Is there anything that landlords that want to sell their luxury property can do in order to ensure a faster selling of their property? And let's say that they have like a personal situation, they still want to sell for top dollar, but they want to sell faster. Is there anything you do in terms of the, I don't know, the vibe of the house, the energy of the house? I don't know, the feng shui. Do you like do energy, I don't know, like a staging, or do you, I don't know, change certain things in the actual house or in the entrance to maximize the look of the house? Or is that like beyond the scope of what you do? Or is there anything that you suggest other potential landlords do to sell their luxury properties at top dollar?
Staging is the number one for me. Staging, stage properties sell much faster and for top dollar, about 11% more, I believe, than non-staged properties. And so if it's vacant and it's just empty with nothing in it, I would highly recommend to have it staged, physically staged, because a lot of people do this virtual staging where they just stage the photographs, but then people still walk into an empty apartment. Doesn't have the same effect. So staging more than anything would help. And that includes, you know, if they have some, you know, dark wall colors and things like that, painting things white and brightening up the space is very, very helpful, makes it look bigger. And definitely the staging and the furniture make the rooms actually look bigger than an empty room. So of all the things you mentioned, staging for sure and getting a good stager will definitely help sell faster and for more money.
Thank you. What kind of habits, routines or apps should a potential landlord of a luxury home, should this person have, aside from hiring a great luxury realtor like you, in order to make sure that he finds a potential buyer for his property?
You know, I maintaining it, you know, he has to do his part, right? So I will do my part, but there's only so much that I can do. The property owners need to do their part, and that is maintaining, you know, keeping it clean, making sure that, you know, appliances are updated and anything else in the building, depending if it's on a house or an apartment building, are up to date and kept well, and, you know, make sure it's clean before we start showing it, and if it has to be painted, to paint things. So they have to do their part as far as making it presentable to show, and I will do my part in getting more people through the door than anybody else and getting it sold faster for more money than anybody else. But there is a little bit that they need to do, and that's maintaining the property, and that's all I ask.
Thank you. Where else would you recommend landlords find places where a lot of buyers tend to hang out?
Well, New York City could be anywhere. I mean, you know, I've done deals, gotten clients just at a bar, you know, hanging out. There are people everywhere in this city. But, you know, that's really what our job is brokers, right? Because we are plugged into all of the platforms and all the people and who have buyers and where to find them and do that. And that's ultimately what people hire us to do. If people had access to all the buyers themselves and had access to all these things, then they would be able to just sell the property themselves and not have the issues that a lot of for sale by owners have. So ultimately, that's why you would hire someone like me or a broker, because we have the access to the buyers and we know where they are and we know how to reach them and we know how to market to them. So like I said, all we need them to do is take care of the property and we'll handle the rest.
Thank you. Are there any specific places that these kind of luxury buyers tend to hang out? Like, I don't know, yacht places or I don't know, really expensive, like luxury venues that you would encourage someone to hang out in order to like be able to sell their luxury property?
Yeah, we have in New York City, we have some of these exclusive clubs, you know, that a lot of wealthy people hang out in. Some you need to join, have a membership. Some you need to be let into. Some you can just go and mingle amongst them. But there are definitely some of these very, very high net worth clubs where a lot of these clientele tend to hang out in New York City.
Thank you. What needs to happen in the listening when you are with an ultra wealthy potential client so that you're able to close a deal?
With my listening to them?
Yeah.
You know, it's really about, and this is what, it's active listening with any client is the most important, because when you actively listen to what they need and what they want, right, you can really become empathetic to what they need and really develop that connection and really, really do what they are looking for and not what you're looking for as the broker, right? So that's our job, to make sure we understand the needs of our clients, whether they're selling or buying, and just really, really understand their motivations, their goals, what they're looking to do. And when you can understand that, you can put together the appropriate plan for them specifically. And that really, really cements the relationship. So real estate brokers tend to have a problem with talking too much and not really actively listening. But those who could really actively listen and ask questions and dig below the surface to what the client needs will have a much, much higher rate of success, not only in getting that property sold, but developing a long-term relationship with that particular client.
Thank you. What I found quite effective in terms of marketing properties myself, when I was trying to rent, not luxury properties, but, you know, more like average looking properties, was actually explaining the area. You know, so for example, like selling, okay, there's the supermarket here, and then there's like a school there, and then there's like the doctor is there, you know. Is that something that you recommend that a potential landlord does as well, so that to increase the probability of someone seeing the potential of the area, including not only what's currently available, but what's coming up? So for example, is there a new, I know, railway, or is there a new bus, or is there a new, I know, I guess bus is not a big thing in the US because everyone has a car, but I know something that could potentially be appealing to them, like, I know, private members club that could be reached within, I don't know, 15 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever. Or are there any other creative marketing techniques that would make a particular property more sellable?
Yeah. And first of all, in New York City, nobody has a car. So there are a lot of buses around here. So buses and subways. But yeah, because each neighborhood in New York City is so specific and so different, it is very important. And we do this in our videos that we shoot. Not only are we putting the property in the video, but I have my videographers also go out on the street to, you know, very important establishments that are in the neighborhood, important things people would want to see or know, whether it's a subway stop that's up the block, or the new Whole Foods that opened, or Trader Joe's, or a park, or something like that. That's going to be important. And so it's about selling the lifestyle as much as it is selling the apartment itself. And we're fortunate in New York that really every neighborhood has its own personality, has its own sort of different sorts of people like to live in different neighborhoods, and you need to know who wants to live where and what's going to attract them to that neighborhood and who you're going to be marketing to. And it is definitely an important part of marketing the property. And that is, you know, the neighborhood itself and surrounding areas and the building and all of those things that you mentioned.
Thank you. What would need to happen in the communication and negotiation with a potential buyer so that you make sure that the property comes across as highly desirable right now? Because I think that a lot of people are very excited, you know, seeing the property, and they could be like, oh my God, this person is totally going to get it. And then they go home and someone else makes them change their mind. Maybe it's their wife or, you know, someone. What needs to happen in that communication and negotiation that keeps that excitement over the longer term so that the client actually puts down the money for that particular property?
Yeah. So the two things have to happen for a buyer to make a decision. The first thing that has to happen is the emotional part. So first they have to love it. So they have to come in and go, oh my God, I love this room. I love that room. I love it. I'm in love with the whole property. what happens in between is sometimes that second part doesn't occur. And that is the logical, rational part. And that, does this property actually work for the needs of our family? Is it in the school district that we want? Is it near the subways that we want? Is it all of those things that have to happen as well to marry the emotional part before a buyer will put money down? So they could love the property all day, but if it doesn't work for them rationally and logically and to their everyday use, they're not going to end up buying it. So both things have to happen in order to do that. So as part of my job is to obviously let them fall in love with the property and do all that, which a lot of these properties speak for themselves. And my job is really to get across, to reinforce all the positives of the place, so they understand all the positive things as far as what they told me they're looking for, that what it fits and that it checks all of these boxes. But also any potential negatives, my job is to take it and to kind of flip them into something more positive, to make sure they understand that nothing's going to be perfect, to make sure that they understand that if it checks 80% of your boxes, you need to seriously consider it. So, my job is to keep them focused on the goal and to focus on how much they love the apartment, and also that it really does fit most of the things that you've been telling me that you're looking for.
Thank you. How can a landlord minimize what could possibly go wrong in the viewing so that the viewing kind of ends up the right way? And I'll give you an example. Let's say that typically, the home is, ultra luxury and looking really great, but that day there is a stabbing in front of the property. Okay. That instantly ruins the entire experience. And I haven't had that, luckily, but what I did have when I was doing a viewing many years ago was a car exploded in front of the apartment. And I've never seen that before. And it's not like a regular thing that happens, luckily, but it just like happened, right? So what I managed to do is like convince the potential client to have a burger with me in, nearby. And he did. And then he ended up staying there for 3 years. I was renting it out. So I'm wondering, what can a potential agent or landlord do to minimize these kind of potential incidents of what could possibly go wrong to prevent it so that the experience of viewing is a great one?
Yeah, well, it's hard for us to control anything that happens outside of the property. We can have control what happens inside and making sure that it's clean and presented well and no clutter and all of those things, or stage if we need it to be. It's very hard to control what happens outside the building. These days, a lot of the buildings are responsible for things like that. So, they do a very good job of, making sure if it snows that it's all cleaned up and easy to walk. And, because that could be something as simple as that, right? If there's a building that doesn't do a good job cleaning the ice or snow away after it snows and someone's coming in to walk into the building and everything else is clean and this building has snow in front of it and it's slippery and dangerous, that one thing can affect the whole showing and how they feel about the property. So the buildings do mostly good job about that. But also and if there's an issue, I would be proactive in talking to the doorman or talking to the building management to say, look, we're trying to sell apartments and, there are, it's New York City. So, there are rats all the time, crawling out front in front of the garbage, and it's really puts off the buyers. Is this something we can do about it? So, we can control what we can control. I will definitely be much more control what's happening in the property. If there's something happening outside of the property, I will definitely be proactive in trying to get someone who could take care of it to take care of it.
Thank you. Now, you've sold more than $500 million in real estate in New York City. Tell us about your journey of how you accomplished that. What would you say was like the key to your success?
I was a very, very big cold caller. I used to make between 2,500 and 3,000 cold calls a week. And I have a niche. I basically built my business on selling expired listings or for sell by owner listings. So I've been able to sell properties that for one reason or another, whether it was another broker or themselves, were not able to be sold before. And a lot of that success has come from being more willing to, you know, invest into marketing a property more than most brokers are. I believe in the importance of marketing and also the voice and my ability to sell. Once I get people through the door, my ability to take the positives and accentuate them even more, and any potential negatives and flipping them into positives. You know, I'm very, very good at that. And so I just think the combination of my out-of-the-box marketing and creative marketing, and then combined it with my ability to sell. There's a difference between showing a property and selling a property. Very big difference. And I think I have done very, very well being able to sell and also bring in more traffic than most brokers. So that combination, plus my perseverance and determination and my hard work at cold calling and developing that. And then ultimately that led to me growing my team organically at bigger brokerages and growing that to what has now ultimately led to me owning my own firm here in New York City.
Thank you. Do you have any funny story or fascinating story of a case study? You don't have to mention his name, of a person that you have helped that became very happy with the price of the property portfolio or property that they have sold through you?
I have a lot of stories. I had a client that they owned in one of our buildings on Central Park and Billionaires Row, as it's called, on 57th Street. And a lot of sellers are very hands-on. They were the opposite. They were hands-off. When we met the first time, they had another broker before, didn't get the apartment sold. I told them, we have this plan, we will get it sold. And by the way, one of the unique things about what I do in my company is what no one else in New York does, is that I also back up what I say, and that in my agreements, I have a cancel at any time clause that you can fire us at any time if you're not happy with the job that we're doing. Most real estate contracts in New York City are 6 months or 9 months. My contracts, I spend all the money up front knowing that my clients can fire me after a week, after 2 weeks. So they feel that trust and they feel they're not being held hostage if there's an issue. And it also helps with accountability for me and my team as well. That's a side point. So this particular seller said to me when we met, she goes, I trust you to sell the property. I don't want to hear from you again until the closing. So she said. So I said, you don't want any updates. You don't want like to hear how it's going with the showings. No, I trust you. If we get an offer, you can tell me. If we accept it, we'll accept it. But otherwise, I don't want to hear from you again until the closing. So that was the one I mentioned before, that it took me two showings to sell it, even though it was on the market for 6 months before with another broker who couldn't sell it. I put my marketing plan in place. We sold it in two showings in 1 week. And the next conversation I had with her was 30 days later at the closing. So that was just a unique story, because a lot of sellers definitely want a lot of communication, you know, once a week. And I usually call all my clients once a week with an update, here's how the week was, here's how the showings went, feedback, all of those things. This was the total opposite of anything. I don't want to hear anything until you have a deal in the apartment. So that was definitely a very interesting and unique experience for me.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can find you.
They can find me at www.74westre.com. That's the number 74westre.com. And those who are interested, 74 West is the longitude of New York City. So that's where the name came from. You could also email me anytime at Ethan, E-T-H-A-N, at 74westre.com.
Thank you.
Follow me for more property wealth strategies.